All right, everybody, quick heads up. This is going to go fast today. I've only got time to record an hour. So looking at the call volume, it's starting to roll in. But if you press one on your phone pretty quickly, I'll still be able to get to you in this first hour. So anything goes today. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic about anything at all, go ahead and press one on your phone right now. You should be able to get in. If you wait much longer, probably not. Here we go.
Money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your authority, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give me a call. Yeah, you know, I've been doing book reviews at the beginning of every show, and I'm not going to do a review tonight. I'm going to let you know that I'm kind of combining three books. I did a pretty extensive review on The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. That's book number one by Stephen Covey. And then two books that I think really go along with it well, because building those seven habits in that book will virtually change your life and allow you to accomplish anything you want, really. But building habits is not easy, even if you know what habits to build, and that's what the book is all about. So I'm including two other books that I think will really help you understand how to build and develop those habits. So I'm kind of putting these three books together, and I'm reviewing the second one now. I'll move on to the third, and then I'll kind of do a recap and tell you how they all work together. But I thought I'd tonight just give you an idea of what the three books are. So it's The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, The Willpower Instinct by Kelly McGonigal, and The Power of Habits by Charles Duhigg. So if you want to grab those books and listen along, or wait, I guess, and see if the review is interesting to you, I'll continue on with the reviews later this week. Tonight, we're going to get to some phone calls. We're going to start off in Alabama. James, welcome to the program.
How's it doing, Kevin?
Good. What can I help you with today?
Blood pressure. I just did a physical about a week and a half ago, and it turns out the FMCSA requires that my blood pressure be 140 over, I think, 88 and below. And mine was like 178, right, that day. And I just made a lot of mistakes. I didn't sleep all that well. I drank caffeine. I was rushing around. And so since then, I've dropped all the five-hour energies. And I've got my blood pressure down. It kind of stays above it. It's like 156. The only way I can really get it below that to like the 130s and all that is to run and then sit down for a few minutes, like 20 minutes, and then it'll get below 140. I'm not sure that's necessarily going to work when I have to sit in a medical office for a while waiting for a doctor, because my blood pressure may raise back up, you know, while I'm sitting there.
Yeah, so when do you have to retest? By when?
September 19th, I have to go see my doctor, because what they did is they gave me a 3-month medical card, but I have to see my primary care doctor, which is just a pain because you have to deal with the VA. So I have to wait until September 19th to talk to him.
Okay, so that gives you some time, because there aren't any dependable quick fixes. You know, like you said, you might be able to run, and if the timing is just right, but that's not real dependable. So
right,
we need to work on some strategies that will actually lower it permanently, not just, you know, hope for the best. Diet is obviously number one. And so far, the best diet I've found for lowering blood pressure is kind of a modified ketogenic. So we talk about the ketogenic diet all the time. That's high fat, moderate protein, low carbohydrate. That goes a long way. If we modify
I have a question
that,
about that. Okay, Kevin, I have one question, but I'm pretty much on a ketogenic diet. I've talked to you many times about what I'm eating. It's high fats, very little proteins. I don't eat many vegetables. Could this be part of the problem? I eat like eggs. I'll eat like butter and olive oil, and I'll eat some like kale and all that, but I don't eat many vegetables at all.
Well, that's where I was starting to say a modified ketogenic. So we still want to focus on high fat, moderate protein, but we can up the carb count some if the carbs are the right carbs, and that does help lower blood pressure. So focus on some of the root vegetables. Sweet potatoes are a great option.
Okay.
Any of the greens. So, you know, eat salads, but don't eat salads with iceberg lettuce, not even romaine. Eat salads that are primarily spinach, baby spinach leaves, mixed greens, you know, the darker red lettuces, and focus on salads or vegetable dishes with lots of color. And those are the and then we also want to keep the mineral balance right. That's a big part of blood pressure. So
yeah, I use a light balance. I do drink that. I'm going to order some more of that.
Okay.
I'm also on my medication too. I'm on Lasaritan, so I'm also on that. I've been going back to that, and that has helped me with my lowering my blood pressure.
Then, so add more vegetables. Make sure you keep doing the light balance every day. That's the product I was going to recommend, by the way. So keep doing that. Eat more vegetables, salads. Sweet potatoes, carrots. So you can add those carbs back in. That's why I say it's kind of a modified ketogenic, and that's going to help lower blood pressure better. And then lifestyle is big. Lifestyle is really big when it comes to blood pressure. So, you know, the fact that you can go run and then 20 minutes later it's lower, that's a sign that we should be getting more activity. And if you consistently get activity like that every day or several times a week, you're going to see a lowering over time. I would also highly recommend meditation.
Yeah, I do 5 minutes of meditation and I exercise every day. When I run about a mile and a half at a time, but I do one exercise a day.
Okay. I would look at meditating longer. 5 minutes is a great start. I would work that up to 15 a day or 3 5-minute sessions if you like that better. But get a little more time in. And rather than just go run a mile and a half, are you familiar with high-intensity interval training?
Not really, no.
Okay, so let me explain the difference. And it's really nice because it takes less time and it's more effective. So I would imagine your mile and a half run takes you 30 minutes.
It takes me, a mile and a half takes me about 16 minutes.
Oh, okay, so you're running a pretty good pace.
Yeah.
Okay, so in about the same amount of time, I'll tell you the ideal way to do this since you like to run. You can do high intensity training in a lot of different things, but if you're already comfortable running, rather than just go run at a steady pace for a mile and a half, if you can find a hill, it works better, but you can do it on flat ground. If you can find a hill, you literally sprint as hard as you can for 20 to 30 seconds. Then turn around and walk back down the hill and walk for about a minute. Then sprint back up 20 to 30 seconds, then walk back down. And in And you can play around with those times and see what works. But what you want is a period of just full-out activity and then a slightly longer period of rest, but you want to keep moving. You don't want to just stop. You want to walk a little bit. And do that maybe like 8 sets. So 8 sprints, 8, you know, walking kind of pace. You can also do this on a bike.
Sprint for about 30 seconds and then just walk back to where I was at and sprint back.
Yeah.
And do 8 sets of that? Okay.
That will – it's better conditioning and it will be more effective at lowering blood pressure. And then you can mix that up. So what it does is kind of keep your body always reacting. Because what happens when we do aerobic – it's the kind of the phenomenon where you see marathon runners who start gaining weight, and no matter how much they run, they keep gaining weight. It's because their body just acclimates to that pace. So by doing the high intensity and altering the pace a lot, your body is always reacting to it. So it kind of helps with plateaus, but it will really help with your blood pressure. So work on that. Call me back in a month and let's see what's going on with it. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. Let's head off to Ohio. Lee, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I have a question about tires and tire pressure, and then I have another topic I'd like to bring up if you have time for that one.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm a company driver for a small fleet here in Findlay, Ohio. I love the company. I don't know if you'll let me get in a plug for them or not, but they have a 4-on-4-off program that I just love. I get in about 2,000 miles a week in 4 days flat, and then I take 4 days off. It's fantastic. But their maintenance director is instructing all of us to there's only two owner-operators. We're all kind of, you know, employee drivers here, and our instructions are to run 110 PSI in the steer axle and 100 PSI in the drives and the trailer. And these are all low-range G tires, rated, of course, at 110. So I want to go to this guy and say, you're costing yourself X number of miles per gallon fleet-wide by running 16 out of 18 tires, 10 PSI lower than they should be. So what do you think that figure is?
You know, it's not big. This is a really, really common practice. And the guy's going to find if he's – you know, looking at manuals, if he's looking online, if he's part of, say, the TMC, he's going to find a tremendous amount of evidence that what he's doing is just fine. So it's going to be really difficult to convince him that there's a better way. And I wish I could give you a bigger number, but honestly, that 10 pounds of pressure is really minor when it comes to fuel economy. You know, we talk about it here because with owner operators, we like pushing, you know, every limit, squeezing out every tenth that we can. And, you know, so I've always pushed running the high end of the pressure range. And I've always done it just for fuel economy. The interesting thing was when I met Mike Beckett a long time ago and I brought it up to him and I said, look, is there any downside to this? I said, we watch tire wear. And we push it right to the top of the limit without creating any irregular tire wear. And he said, no, there's no downside. And he said, I recommend the same thing, but he said, I recommend it because of wear problems. because he said, in all the years I've been doing this, I never run into a tire problem because there's too much pressure. He said, we always run into problems because there's not enough pressure. So he said,
that's
the
conversation I heard. Yeah. That's what I heard from him, you know, 3 weeks ago on the Power Hour or whatever show it was, the tow end. And he's like, you can't go wrong by overinflating a tire up to the wheel limit. So this company also now, he is a firm believer in his recaps. He likes to run quality caps.
Wow.
And I'm wondering if that's the reason, that by going 10 PSI, he's less likely to throw a cap. Is that right?
Honestly, I think you're more likely.
Really?
See, the harder we make the tire, the less it's going to flex. And that's
right.
Why we get better rolling resistance, because if you take a piece of rubber and you flex it back and forth, what happens to it?
Heat.
Heat is always lost energy, always. So anytime we develop heat, we're losing energy to create that heat. So if we make a tire nice and stiff and it doesn't flex, it won't get as hot. It is more efficient, but also it's heat that usually destroys a tire. It's heat over time that will cause a cap to come apart. So
the science of that I'm sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
Isn't the science of that the heat actually makes the rubber softer, more pliable, and therefore more likely to separate the cap or create a lifting bubble?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. If we put enough heat to that cap, we could peel it right off. I mean, that's how it's put together with heat. So if we put enough heat back to it, we could take it apart. So you will always want a tire to run cooler if you want it to last longer. And the way to get it to run cooler is to overinflate it so it's nice and stiff. Now, if we follow the science behind this, and the TMC talks about this, tire manufacturers talk about this, technically, every time you load that truck, you should be adjusting the tire pressure. All of the charts really are based on weight. So the heavier you run, the more pressure you put into the tire. And that number that's on the side is not the maximum tire pressure. It's not maximum at all, but that's what everybody believes it is. Everybody believes, that's the maximum. I can't inflate it more than that. No, that's the maximum at a certain weight.
So you mentioned the tire manufacturers. These guys actually are a test platform for Cooper Tires, which is also right here in Findlay. And he's getting good information from them. He's definitely involved in the TMC. What in the heck are these people telling him that says it's okay to run 100 instead of 110, do you suppose?
Well, it's okay. And again, if he's getting the right information, it would be you always base your pressure on your weight. Well, that's good, but it's not practical in the real world. Nobody is going to take the time to try to adjust air pressure to weight every load. So
not even every day. We're talking about employee drivers that maybe bring out a tire gauge when the tire kicks funny, it quivers, you know?
Yeah. So Mike and I, we both have the same approach, but it's different than almost everybody else in the industry. We like to run on the high side. He likes to it because it cuts down irregular wear. I like to do it because it improves fuel economy. It's not a huge improvement, but it's an improvement. So the only downside to it is it will make the truck ride a little rougher. Well, that's not a big deal to me. I'm willing to give up a little bit of ride. And, you know,
we have three different versions of air ride suspension now. It's okay.
Yeah.
The truck runs rough. The RC does not.
Yeah, but, you know, it's an uphill battle to try to convince these guys because they're going to say the tire manufacturer said this, TMC said this. Why the hell would I listen to some guy on the radio?
Yeah. So if you had to throw a number at it, what do you suppose the percentage would be? Is it negligible or can you even say?
It's probably a tenth, and a tenth is virtually impossible to measure. So we can't test for a tenth. So to prove to somebody that it's there, I mean, I can go to the science. There is a calculation on this. I don't have it in front of me anymore because nobody pays attention to it anyway. But there is a calculation for every 10 pounds you increase, you decrease rolling resistance by X. Then we take that and we calculate it against fuel economy. But roughly it's going to be maybe a tenth. And there's a limit. You know, if we add 10 pounds and we increase a tenth, adding 20 isn't going to increase it two tenths. There's an upper limit to where it helps. And we run into the upper limit, which is usually the limit on the rim, not the tire.
Many times,
tire will handle way more pressure than the rim will.
Right. You know, you just reminded me of a question that I wanted to ask you last week about something the same maintenance director said. He said, when you put the skirts on a truck and gain 3%, you put the air tabs on and gain another, whatever you say it is, 2 or 3%. You put get the fairings all scooched, the trailer scooched as far forward to close up that gap, you gain a percent or so. And then you put the flow below and the hubcaps on and everything and gain another 3%. He says, all of those things do not actually add up to 10%. It's not a cumulative thing. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I don't know why. And it's absolutely true, because if we took everything that we know about fuel economy that we've proven over the years, on average, this change adds this much, this change. If we added them all up, we should be able to build a truck that gets 12 miles to the gallon, but we can't. We add them all up.
In the real world, 10, it doesn't work.
Yeah, 10 seems to be that kind of upper limit right now until we come up with some new technology that'll help. But if we sat down and said, okay, this truck has no modifications and it's getting 7 miles to the gallon, if we do everything and we add up all the improvements, it should be a 12-mile to the gallon truck, and it never works. It's not cumulative. Yeah. 10,
so my hats off to Bruce and Pittsburgh Power for the new technologies that they're working on with the electric drive and the regenerative braking and so on. I think that is definitely an excellent direction for us to take, and will very clearly get us over 10 miles per gallon with any truck that uses it. I think
you know, that's the kind of stuff we've got to do. But honestly, I don't see this guy changing his mind. Nobody in the industry is going to tell him 100 is too low. I might, Mike Beckett might, but 100 by all the charts, plenty of air pressure. It's just we think there's a better way. There just aren't many people that agree. So he'll probably, it sounds like he is involved in a lot of things, and he'll go on taking their advice. And it's not going to cause any problems. It's not optimal, I don't think. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the calls. We're off to Georgia. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I've got a wide-base single tire for you. Question, I just converted my truck and trailer over to wide-base, and the rims that I got, I traded my duals off my truck for the wide-base that I got on my truck, but the singles that I bought for the trailer, I bought them outright. Paid $900 for the ones on the trailer, rim and tire. But what's the two different ones that's a zero offset, and what is it, half inch or 2 inch offset?
a 0 and a 2. There are some other weird ones out there, but those are the most common, 0 and 2. And if you take a 2-inch and flip it around the other way, it comes pretty close to 0.
Okay, so it's still going to be sticking out just a little bit, but it's not going to be on a 0 offset, right?
Correct. It's when you take a 2 and flip it around, you almost can't see the difference. You almost have to run it through like snow or something to be able to see the little difference in width.
Okay. Now, my truck, my axles are rated at 40,000. I've got them on the 2-inch offset sides that are sticking out farther. I do plan on changing them, turning them around, but I bought the Michelin X1 Line Energy D. Those are directional tires, so those aren't able to be rotated like normal tires, right? Or can you rotate those, like take the back right and put it on the front left?
Yeah, you can rotate them and flip them around. They are technically a directional tire, but from what I've learned from Mike Beckett, it's a wear thing. It has nothing to do with anything except getting the tire to break in and wear properly. And he says that if you run that tire in the right direction for about 30,000 miles, then you can flip them around any way you want.
Okay. And now on my trailer, I got the Hendrickson suspension, and I think those are 24,000-pound axles. So will those be okay to leave those at the 2-inch offset, or do I need to turn those around also?
We are really recommending, we're recommending never to run on the 2-inch. Always run on the 0.
Okay, so I need to flip those around too then?
Yep. Yeah, the reason we do is it's too unpredictable. Sometimes even the axles that they claim are rated to use the 2-inch, you still run into some problems. So we've just kind of taken the idea that run them all on 0 and you will avoid the problems. Let's go to Minnesota. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey there.
Yeah, this weekend it was a pretty good theme with the engine start module, and I wanted to give the listeners another idea of what can be done with it. I've had mine for a year and a half now, and it actually failed, and they next day it to me, but that was great customer service. But what I ended up doing, I ran my lead acid batteries until they were shot, and then I looked around. I checked the Optimus, but the company has been bought by one of the mega battery makers, and now they've actually dropped the quality on those Optimus somewhat since they bought it out. They're not built quite like they were 2 or 3 years ago, and they were still expensive. I actually got mine at Sam's Club. I got the Duracell AGM deep cycle batteries for $179 a piece, 18 months full replacement guarantee on it, and another 18 months of prorated after that. So if it failed in 19 months, I'd only pay $10 to replace them. Or 20 months, I'd pay $20. Or 21 months, $30. I mean, up to three years, you still get some guarantee on it. And I had checked. Some of the listeners or check some of the people that had that battery, and it was lasting 4 to 5 years. So that's a way to have good AGM deep cycle batteries at a very good price. And after this, I got one more thing I thought about after I got off the phone with Bridget to bring up to you too. But what do you think about that AGM battery?
You know, I've actually used the Duracell before in one of the RVs, and I didn't keep them for a long time, but they seemed like a quality battery, and it was a good price. And the other thing we have to remember is, if we're using any AGM, and we've taken it out of the start cycle because we have the Maxwell in there, any battery is going to last longer than what we're used to. And for $179, if I'm guaranteed 18 months and I have some coverage up to 3 years, that's kind of hard to beat.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. The other thing I thought about was I don't know if you saw the FMCSA change rules last week, a few rules, and I think this has to do with what the National, and this is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. They come out a while back, and they put a bulletin out saying that wide singles were not safe over 65 miles an hour. And the FMCSA came out with a ruling the other day saying that certain wide-based singles were going to be speed-limited by law enforcement. So if you were going 75 and you had wide singles, you'd get a ticket. That's the way it read. But I don't know if you saw a while back when NHTSA said that his tires were not safe above 65. I don't know if you saw that or not, but I saw that. But then when this came out the last 10 days, it came out the 22nd of July, I kind of put it together as being that NHTSA has influenced FMCSA to allow, CVSA and the law enforcement to have another way to get a little money off truckers. Now, I don't want to go over 65. I wouldn't want to go over 65 anyhow myself.
Right.
NHTSA said they were unsafe above that amount, that speed. And so I didn't know if you had heard that, or maybe you could do some research into what NHTSA came out with. This was maybe 6 months ago. And, I was waiting for the other shoe to drop when I saw that. I said they may just ban wide singles on trucks because most every, a lot of guys do like to run more than 65. I remember when that came out. So what are your thoughts on that? I know too.
Yeah, here's the thing. This is one of those regulations I could care less about because I've said for years, if you're going to run 70 or faster, don't even worry about rolling resistance. Rolling resistance actually changes when we get up to those speeds. It becomes a much smaller factor. So if you're running 70 plus, you're not really concerned about fuel economy. So don't spend the money on a high or a low rolling resistant tire. And I've also said, certainly don't buy a wide single because they wear funny at that speed. You will wear out the center of the tire. And I believe that's why they become unsafe. What happens, if you've ever watched a dragster take off with the big fat tires and they take off and the tire goes from being short and squatty and it stands up and gets tall and skinny.
Yeah.
That's what happens at high speed on a wide single. The edges start to pull up off the road, and it elongates, and only the center of the tire makes contact with the ground. So it's not a good tire to run fast. The reason it becomes unsafe is because your contact patch gets much smaller. So I agree, their testing is probably correct. I don't know that we need a regulation because people are going to do it anyway. And here's the thing. How many law enforcement people know this? Probably none.
Yeah, very few of them are going to read the bulletins like I am.
Exactly. So the odds of somebody getting a ticket because they were going faster than 65 with a wide single, my God, not only do we keep piling regulation on top of regulation, we make them more and more complicated. I am still a huge fan of wide singles, but I'm also a fan of not running faster than 65.
Exactly. Yeah. So, it was just something that kind of jumped out at me, and I thought about it. Also, we also lose the ability, I don't know if you knew this, on the 22nd one day, they came out with several regulations. One was, if you pass a level one DOT inspection, you actually have 1 year from that date to get your next DOT inspection on your tractor. You have that up to now. They disallow that in the future going forward. A level one inspection being perfect doesn't matter. You still got to get a mechanic to check your DOT. And we have a 4-month inspection at Landstar, and we had that ability to use that level one, but I think they'll take that away from us now. So, you know, like I say, they always come out with a little more regulation, though. Well, thank you for your time today. So.
You're welcome. It's job security. People in government have to do something. So if they can't think of new regulations to make, they'll just go change old ones. It's just ridiculous. Stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to the calls. We're off to Texas. Raphael, welcome to the program.
Hello there, Kevin. I had a question about, I got super singles on my truck, but I got the X1, XD, N2s, I believe.
Yes.
And I was wondering the rolling resistance between that one and the energy line.
Yeah, it's not very
good. Difference.
The XDN2, the rolling resistance is 119, and the line energy D is 89. So you've got a 30-point difference, which is actually about 3/10 of a mile per gallon.
3/10, okay. So, all right, because that's what it came with. Virgin rubber all the way around when I got this truck. So is it worth it just changing them over to energies?
Well, it's a numbers game. So it's just some math, and it depends on how much you can get somebody to pay you for those. A lot of times you can get, you know, pretty decent money for those because people don't pay attention to rolling resistance. So, you know, at today's fuel price, 3/10 of a mile per gallon roughly costs you about $1,500 a year, maybe a little more, but let's go with $1,500 at today's fuel price. So if you could make the swap and put less than $1,500 out of pocket to do it, then I would do it. My break even, you know, for an easy decision is about a year. If I can make my money back in a year, then I'll usually do it. If I have the money, I'll usually do it. Now, if it costs me $2,500 to make the swap, which I can't imagine it costing that much, I would probably say no. I would just wear these out at today's fuel price. But if I could get it done for $1,500, it'd be a slam dunk. I would just go do it.
Oh, okay. And then I had one question about, because I run a flatbed spread axle, 10-foot spread. I've been having trouble getting a right tire close shoulder to take that wear on the front axle. What would you recommend?
There isn't really a tire on the market that does handle that well. You know, I've talked to some people that, now, are you running duals back there?
Yes, I'm running duals.
You know, probably the best report, the tire that I've had people say does the best. I'm trying to see if I can remember what the, I don't remember the model, but it's a Continental. There was a Continental trailer tire that everybody said did really well on that spread, but I just don't remember which model it was.
Okay.
But
all right.
I think you'll find that almost every tire is going to give you some wear issues on that spread.
Yeah, because I put some Michelins and I ate them up about like within 5 months at the front and left axle. So
yeah, you can play around and try different tires. You might also want to go to a regional tire. So, you know, Michelin's long haul tires are their best rolling resistance, but they also make regional tires that stand up to scrubbing a lot better.
Oh, okay. I might see some of those. See what I can do.
Yeah. Yeah, check that out. That may help you. I think you're going to find that it's kind of hit or miss. I haven't consistently found a tire that really makes a big difference. Let's go to California. Adam, welcome to the program. Adam, are you there?
Yep. Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, there you go. Go ahead.
Did you take a look yet?
Adam, you're really breaking up bad. Try that again. Oh, boy. I think I'm losing you. Now I'm not hearing anything. I'm going to put that on hold. We'll see if we can save it, although I think I'm going to run out of time. Let's go to Minnesota. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Fair tax yesterday there, Kim.
Absolutely. What do we got going on today?
Well, before we start, I just want to say something. Y'all hooked me up through your mentorship program with Steve, the guy who just called a little while ago, the guy that gave you the update on the regulations. One of the nicest guys, and I honestly think that your mentorship program was probably one of the best phone calls I ever made.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
And now for the bad phone call. Have you got my oil sample in front of you?
I do. Did you break out your box of crayons and start coloring on this thing or what?
Oh, my God. I've got more colors on there than a gay pride parade, don't I?
That thing is just ugly.
But what have I got going on?
Here's the good news. There's a pretty obvious reason here, and I think if we fix one problem, we're probably going to fix the others. But you are going to need to do an oil change because we're going to need to reset here. You've got an intake problem, a torn air filter. We're sucking dirt somewhere. Unless,
okay.
And ask this, has the top end of the engine been opened anytime recently?
Yes, it has. This is where it gets really funky and complicated. About 2,000 miles ago, I shattered my radiator. I replaced everything from the radiator forward. This is also that same engine that was pissing oil out of the side of the engine. And we found I had a blow-by tube blocked off. And we took the whole top end of the engine off and redid everything from the head up.
Okay. So, and the reason I ask that is because I'm seeing a lot of silicon. So, and silicon would cause the other problems. Silicon,
right.
I mean, if you get enough of it in there, it's kind of like putting sandpaper to your cylinders. I mean, you will get wear metal.
All right.
It can get a little confusing when somebody opens up the engine because they could have gotten a lot of dirt in there when they opened it, but also some of the sealants we use to put it back together can show up as silicon. Because we're seeing all of a sudden the wear metals jumped up, I'm going to assume that it's dirt and it is causing some wear. Opening it up also caused some of the oxidation, so that's not a big deal. What we need to do here is just make sure I would reinspect things like the air cleaner, make sure things aren't torn, make sure the gasket is sealing properly when you put it in. Make sure we don't have, you know, a charger cooler leak somewhere or on the hoses. So I would do a good thorough inspection on the whole intake system, maybe even smoke test it. That's a great way to find something quick. Then I would change the oil. And then let's resample and see 15,000 miles.
All right. I changed the oil when I grabbed the sample, and I've got a brand new Duralast on there. You know, I did a Modine radiator and a Duralast charge air cooler there. You don't think a brand new one would start leaching this soon, do you?
No. If it's a Duralite, it's not leaking from the charge air cooler, but I would still smoke test the whole system because we could find an intake manifold, we could find a clamp or a hose, we could find a turbo leaking. The smoke test is the quickest way to find any leak in the entire intake system. And it could be anywhere. I wouldn't pressure test the charger cooler because being a new Duralite, it should be just fine. But I would smoke test the whole system.
All right. All right. Well, I appreciate you, and I'll let it into the shop as soon as I can.
There you go. And give me a call back. Let me try to take another one real quick. Eric, you got about 30 seconds.
All right. My tax liability came back from a health insurance penalty, $2,850 for the year. Should I ignore it or should I pay it?
They're going to make you pay it unless you can. You can't just let it go by default. They're not going to forget about it. You could possibly fight it and maybe win, but you can't just let it go. If you let it go, it's going to build up. They're going to charge you interest and penalties, and it's not just going to go away. And for $2,850, unless you can figure out how to fight it on your own, and you could try, you could ask your tax preparer how much they would charge to go back and work with the IRS. What you don't want to do is spend more trying to fight it than you did just to pay it. I think it's a horrible penalty. I think it's the worst one ever created, but you can't ignore it. I wish we could, but you either have to pay it or you have to formally fight it and see if you can get it changed. Those are your options. I'm all out of time. We'll see you next show. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, thanks. We're just doing that 1 hour today, so we will see you back here tomorrow for the Power Hour.